From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The U.S. House of Representatives shot down a financial bailout bill, but today the U.S. Senate is set to vote on their version of the plan. Plus, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin goes head-to-head with Senator Joe Biden tomorrow night. It's the one and only vice presidential debate. What can we expect on both fronts? We've got Robert Trainum, the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network, CN8. How you doing?
Hello, Farai. How are you?
I'm doing great. So we've got this big bailout that failed in the House. Is the Senate bill different? And if so, how?
Well, it's slightly different in the sense that the language is almost identical. But the difference is that there's a little bit more momentum on the Senate side to get something done for two reasons. Number one is to try to slow down this downward trajectory that it seems like Wall Street and the Dow is on. But also, secondly, to try to put some pressure on the House of Representatives to say, see, we have done this. We've taken a hit. You have to do the same.
What are the politics, and let's break this down by party, what are the politics of this bill for the Republican Party, where you generally saw more members voting against this bailout? Basically in the House of Representatives, everybody is up for reelection at this point. Republicans are expected to lose seats in both the House and the Senate. Are people genuinely thinking this is a bad idea, or are they afraid to go against their constituents, or both?
Well, two things. First and foremost, you have to remember that Republicans just intuitively do not believe, most House conservatives do not believe that this was the right approach. Because their attitude is more of a free market attitude. The government should not in any way, shape, or form interfere with the private enterprise. That's number one. Also, number two, a lot of House Republicans out there said, you know what, why in the world are we rewarding bad behavior? Why in the world are we going out there and we're, quote unquote, bailing out these CEOs and Wall Street executives when they in the first place should not have granted these, quote unquote, bad mortgages or bad debt? And thirdly, and last but certainly not least, a lot of Republicans felt as though is that the poison was in the well even before they voted. They point to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi making a very partisan speech right before the vote. And secondly, they also feel as though is that an organization called Acorn, which, as you know, Farai, is an organization that helps low-income families out there get homes, they believe that that's an extension of the Democratic Party, and thus in the process was a free giveaway in the tune of $30 to $40 million for that organization. So for them, first and foremost, it was a huge philosophical pill for them to swallow, and they just weren't willing to swallow that pill.
Donna, why do you think, and let me just say, we have with us Donna Brazile, Democratic strategist. Donna, thanks for coming on. And do you think that this really broke in terms of politics or policy? Do you think that some Democrats, and yesterday we had on Representative Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas, who voted against the bill, and as well Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California, who voted for it. So neither party had a complete unanimous vote. But do you think that this was more politics or policy in terms of how people made up their minds?
Farai, I believe this was a crisis of leadership on behalf of not just the executive branch, but also the legislative branch. You know, when Wall Street catches pneumonia, Main Street comes down with a severe cold. And when this proposal was put forward, it was put forward as a bailout for Wall Street, because Wall Street had illiquid assets on their books that was causing the credit market to dry up. Now, I think when the Democrats and the Republicans sat down together to come up with a negotiated settlement on how to unclog Wall Street's arteries, Main Street felt that they were bailing out Wall Street. After all, over the past 2 years, there's been $62 billion in bonuses given to Wall Street brokers, and Main Street felt they were being left out. So I think part of the problem is that this deal was brokered without consideration of taxpayers. And whether it's conservative Republicans or liberal Democrats who said no to the deal, the fact is this was a crisis of leadership. And to blame this crisis on a speech that if you saw Pelosi give her remarks, she was addressing her Democratic caucus. She was told that she had to deliver 120 votes. She delivered 140. She cannot deliver more than that because there are Democrats who believe that this proposal will not go far enough in relieving homeowners of the burden that they have now with these mega mortgages that they can't afford. And the foreclosure crisis is real, and we need to address that immediately.
Well, let me jump in here because I want to play a little bit of Senate Banking Committee Chairman Christopher Dodd, who really felt that got to pass this.
The last thing we need is to have this not work again. We better decide whether or not we're serious about this. This is a difficult vote. I wouldn't suggest otherwise, but an important one. And that I know that those who cast votes yesterday are having some second thoughts about the condition they placed us in and are trying to find a way in which to get back on track again.
All right, guys, I want to actually be able to move on and talk a little bit about the vice presidential debates. But before we do, what do we expect from the Senate on this? I mean, one thing I've noted is that international leaders are saying, get your act together, America, pull it together. We need you to pull it together. But what do you think the Senate is going to do? Robert first.
They're going to send a very strong message to Wall Street, but also to Main Street, that this is something that needs to be done immediately. And just to augment what Donna said a few moments ago about the lack of leadership, the Senate is going to try to show leadership and try to pass this in a strong bipartisan way. You know, Farai, very quickly, the failure here is that no one connected the dots and walked John and Sally Smith and Fargo, North Dakota, as to why that this is important to them. The only thing that the average American sees out there are these golden parachutes and, you know, Citigroup buying Wachovia and Lehman Brothers failing. They don't understand exactly how this affects them in terms of their daily credit, whether it be getting a home, a car, an extension of their home equity line, whatever the case may be. The president didn't do that. He tried to last Thursday night, but he failed to do it. Speaker Pelosi failed. Everyone failed to paint this picture for the ordinary American out there that's living paycheck to paycheck.
And Donna, let me add to that. There are some politicians brandishing a petition from academics saying the rescue isn't a good idea. These are academic economists. Some of them are saying that the government should buy up individual mortgages, and that's a solution that might go down easier with voters. So do you think that that's going to affect at least one senator is really saying this backs up the idea that you should not vote for a bailout? What do you expect from the Senate?
Well, first of all, I think the American people should understand that regardless of what passes in the Senate, we are still going to have a major economic crisis on our hand. Manufacturing is now down. The auto sector is down. I'm worried that once this bill passes, Main Street will go back to business as usual, and they don't understand the long-term implications of not dealing with the foreclosure crisis. Home prices are now at an all-time low, and the value of people's homes continue to drop. And as the value continue to drop, people are going to ask themselves, should I stay in this house when it's worthless? So we have another crisis that we have to deal with. And it's important that members of Congress learn how to multitask, communicate better with the public, and show more leadership and less partisanship. I get this as a homeowner, as a taxpayer, and as a small business owner. I get it. And if we can't explain it, as Robert said, to someone in Fargo or Peoria or New Orleans or whatever, we're going to have a hard time getting our economy back on track. And remember, we live in a global economy.
All right. I've got a couple things to ask you about this vice presidential debate coming up tomorrow night. One is, if each of you could ask someone from the opposite side of the aisle a question. So, Donna, if you got to ask Alaska Governor Sarah Palin a question, what would it be?
Well, you know, she is a governor. She's undefeated in debate, 7-0. She defeated a Republican governor and a former Democratic governor. So I would say, Governor Palin, as vice president, you will inherit a $10 trillion national deficit. What steps would you take to get our economy back on track to produce jobs and to get us back in the global economy? I would go straight to the economy.
Robert, what would you ask Senator Biden?
Senator, during the Democratic debate, when you were running for president last year, you said that Senator Obama was not, quote, fundamentally ready to be president. You said that this is not on the job training, given the crisis that we were in. And that was obviously in the context of the war. Now that we're in an economic crisis, as well as a foreign policy crisis, to use your words, as it relates to the war, do you still believe that the number one person on your ticket is ready to be president on day one?
Wow, good stuff. Well, one last thing. The moderator is Gwen Ifill of PBS, and she is set to release a book on Senator Obama and the what some people call the Obama effect in January of 2009. Now, some people are saying that she's pro-Obama and she shouldn't moderate the debate. Is that a fair charge, Robert? Quickly.
It's fair in the context of whether or not she's going to be fair or not. Look, we all have our opinions about this race. There's no question about it. As an African-American, Senator Obama has stirred emotions in a lot of people, both good and bad. As an African-American, I'm very proud of him. However, you do have to be objective in these debates, and I think that's the question for Gwen Ifill. I have confidence that she will be fair. And very, very quickly, if I'm the McCain campaign, this is a gift for me because, again, it lowers the bar even lower for Sarah Palin.
I'm offended. No one, you know, looked at Jim Lehrer because of his white skin and say, will he be fair and objective? Gwen Ifill is a nationally respected journalist, anchor on PBS, and she is writing a book that chronicles how black politics is changing in the aftermath of the Obama presidency. The book is not even out. She is one of the smartest people I know, and I know a lot of people in Washington, D.C., and attacking the press has become a central front in the strategy of winning votes. And it's unfortunate that Gwen is being put through this. And let me just say something. Farrah, you would be a great moderator. Not because you're black and you're a sister, of course, but because you understand the issues, you're objective, and you know how to, you know, pose these questions in a way that would get answers and not just spin. So if not Gwen, if they have to replace Gwen Farrah, I'm for you.
Oh, well, I appreciate
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. I you know, what's that whole phrase? You know, I will not put myself in contention, but if someone else does, how far be it from me to pass that over. And on that very flattering note, that's all we have time for. Thanks, guys.
And thank you for your wonderful journalistic skills.
Thank you. And I'm going to start a website, farrahnow.com.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank
that's
you.
Enough. All right. We were talking with Donna Brazil, Democratic strategist and author of Cooking with Grease, Stirring the Pots in American Politics, and Robert Trainum, the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. They both joined us from NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C.